everybody. It's Nicole Byer here with some hot takes from Wayfair. A cozy corduroy sectional from Wayfair? Yeah, that's a hot take. Go on and add it to your cart and take it. A pink glam nightstand from Wayfair? Scalding hot take. Take it before I do. A mid-century modern cabinet from Wayfair that doubles as a wine bar? Do I have to say it? It's a hot take. Get it at Wayfair.com and enjoy that free shipping too.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
The evidence is gone, but the nightmare continues. Welcome to Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, featuring former prosecutor and defense attorney Eric Faddis.
January 1st of 2025, it's a date that a lot of us are going to remember as the day the year 2025 began with terrorist attacks in the United States. Joining me to discuss the latest on this, as of our recording, Eric Faddis, former prosecutor and defense attorney. This is going to be a very fascinating one to watch and how this plays out. And I want to get your take on this initially, if you can kind of explain. Obviously, we have the individuals who were initially responsible, at least physically responsible for these attacks at the scene, both of them dead. As of our recording right now, there may be others out there. There may be people who helped in this or planned in this. Legally, where does this go from here with your two main perpetrators being deceased?
Right. So, at least as this investigation is developing, what it appears to some is that there was a larger operation going on. Now, the individuals who are dead, of course, they cannot be charged with a crime. Mm-hmm. So criminally, there's no option there. Civilly, is there a way to bring a claim against their estates? Possibly. But is that really efficacious? Hard to say. Really, where the focus is going to be going forward, I think, is determining if there were other people involved, if this was a more concerted effort, if there were other planned violent events, and if there are people who are alive who are responsible for those events, and looking into those folks.
The one we're talking about first, because there's the two that we're kind of grouping the story together now, because it does appear to be connected between the Cybertruck explosion at the Trump Hotel in Las Vegas and the attack in New Orleans. As of our recording, not completely confirmed, but the fact that the two of them went to the same, were at the same military base at the same time, used the same app to get their vehicles. There seems to be a lot in here that kind of makes it, as of our recording, hard to believe that maybe there's not some sort of connection, if not to be a very strange coincidence. Shamsud Dinbar Jabbar is the name of the one who was in New Orleans. This is someone who served 10 years in the U.S. Army. He is a U.S. citizen. He was deployed to Afghanistan, honorably discharged. Has a history, twice divorced, father of two kids, 20 and 15. This is not somebody who came in from another country, but obviously was radicalized. You got people here. You have the ex-wife. You got kids. You got that. It doesn't appear that this man really has many assets, at least on the surface, living in a very disheveled trailer home. Seemed to have obviously a lot of mental health issues. What about that family? What about those kids that are out there now? I mean, what sort of repercussion? I mean, obviously they're not involved in this, but the societal repercussions, I guess, is what I'm speaking of for being connected to someone like that. In a legal standpoint, I mean, what sort of advice would you give to that family who very likely is just as shocked as everybody else at this person did these things?
Oh, sure. So even if there is no criminal case against a dead person, there are national security concerns, and there's an investigation that's going to take place that's going to delve into this person's family, their friends, coworkers, all of that. And so assuming those people had no knowledge of what was going to happen and had no involvement, which I have no evidence that they did, it's probably in their best interest and the nation's best interest for them to be forthcoming, to talk about how did these things happen? How does a person become radicalized? What interventions could have been done? I think those are really important questions in the aftermath of all this chaos.
Let me ask you this. Another, I think, key aspect to this case is not just the fact that you had these two people that were radicalized enough to carry out their version of attacks here. But the fact that we are looking at a real security lapse that did take place, at least in New Orleans, I don't know that I could say the same about the Trump Hotel. Every hotel in Vegas you can drive up to and put your vehicle there. That's not an uncommon thing. I wouldn't expect that much more security for something like that. But certainly the road that the driver went down in Las Vegas that was under construction, their barriers were not up. They were having errors. They were trying to get it ready by the Super Bowl. That right there just seems to be a little insane to me. You have one of the largest New Year's celebrations in the country. We know it's a terrorist target. We have for years. But somehow someone said, we don't have the barriers. We'll put an extra car, a little extra security there, and we'll call it good. This, to me, just seems like an insanely ignorant thing to do, and that may be all it is. It may just be incompetence and people, I don't know, not seeing the possibilities of what people are capable of doing. But that seems like a big glowing error on the part of the city that they did not have this secured better than they did, knowing the potential target that New Orleans is.
Yeah, I mean, so certainly an issue a lot of people are raising. I'm very familiar with New Orleans. I got engaged there. We go there about once a year, been to Mardi Gras several times. And so you have Bourbon Street. And what it sounds like is they were sort of working on some barriers so cars couldn't drive in there, because it's something people walk on, especially mm-hmm. on New Year's Eve. And there are also police vehicles trying to block folks. But those didn't work. Now, you know, how many safety mechanisms can we put in place? How safe can we possibly be? Do we need to like bubble off these big areas where there are big events and do something like that? I mean, we get to a point where is there a ton else that could have been done? You know, if they had these barriers erected effectively, would that have stopped the vehicle? Probably. Could that vehicle have chosen a different street or a different event? I think so. And so it's hard for me to think like what else could have been done. Although certainly there were other measures that could have been made more effective.
Obviously, Bourbon Street, it's a road people walk on. It's not intended for a driving street anymore. But look at New York City. That's a place that they're prepared for this damn thing. And they make it miserable, too. I mean, if you want to go watch the ball drop, you're probably going to have to wear Depends and then get into an isolated area for the next 20 or so hours waiting for that time to come. That's literally what people do there. I can't say I'd ever sign up to want to do something like that if you're in one of those specific zones in New York City. And I can't imagine that working the same way in New Orleans. But it just seems like a dramatic lapse. I mean, I've seen, you know, local events in much smaller communities. They bring in the big concrete barriers, things like that. It can't just be answered with a cop car here and a few extra people. If someone's determined, as we obviously saw, I don't know. I'm not a security expert, but I'm a common sense expert and someone who's lived through 9/11 and other things. And you go and look at this stuff and go, yeah, there's a way they could get through there. There's a way they could get through there. If I, as an average citizen, can see this, why on earth did the police and those in charge of security not look at this and go, look, if somebody's determined enough, they're going to get through here. Why don't we put some more concrete or something? The other question I would be asking would be, is there somebody on the inside with this that also said, maybe we should? I don't know. It seems very ignorant. And ignorant can sometimes look like maybe there's something more to it. And that's probably all it is. But I'm wondering if they're going to be looking at that as well. I would certainly think so, to see if somebody connected on the inside helped enable this. I'm not saying they did, but I'm saying that must be an angle they're going to have to be looking at.
I think the Times Square ball drop example you give is really illustrative, because you're right. There are thousands upon thousands of folks, and they do take severe measures to make sure there's not a car that's mm-hmm. going to be ramming people in there. I wonder if there was maybe a bit of naivete on behalf of New Orleans officials, you know, thinking, oh, you know, those sort of things happen in New York. Maybe they happen in LA or something, but New Orleans, this is down south, you know, good country, whatever. And there's not going to be a terrorist attack here. And lo and behold, there was. In terms of, you always need to look at who knew what and what could have been prevented. And if there are individuals who are sort of on the inside of all of this, who had that knowledge and didn't act on it, that's extremely problematic. If there was someone who had the knowledge and gave some material aid to the violators, that's treason.
I hope to God that that is not the case in any of this. My gut is telling me more ignorance than anything else, and people just not really quite seeing the trees before the forest or the potential of what that could be. And the only thing I could say, because I'd be very curious, is the ages of those people who were making these decisions, quite honestly. And that's just more from an understanding standpoint. Because if you don't really have a lot of knowledge, you didn't live through 9/11, or you were too young or whatnot, if you remember those years right after, I know you're a bit younger than me, but you know, I'm sure you remember that time and that place where security was crazy everywhere we went. And we're all, oh, this kind of sucks, but we kind of got used to it. And it has certainly declined in the last 25 years. And I don't really know why, because we keep hearing and seeing horrible things happen all over the country and all over the world, especially with people driving through places. I don't understand how this was overlooked, because this seems like one of the easiest, most horrible ways to commit get mass casualties at any given time. And this, I think, would be the first thing you'd be trying to tamper off versus anything else, because it's such an easy target, an easy way to get in there.
Totally. And in advance of our podcast today, I looked up prior vehicle ramming incidents. This is a thing. This is emerging. Yeah. This is becoming more popular among terrorist sects and non-terrorist sects. There was the Charlottesville incident. There was an incident in New York in 2017, not Ball Drop, but a different street. And so these things are happening because terrorists are realizing, and just bad actors are realizing, that this is a way to make this effective. Maybe I can't bring a bomb onto an airplane anymore, but I can drive my car down a street and kill a bunch of people. And maybe that is an action we need to look at more seriously in terms of preventing.
It's going to be a wake-up call for other events. I mean, I'm honestly shocked that we don't have more things like this happening with the lack of security that we have in so many areas where we have lots of people together. Is this going to be kind of a little refresher wake-up call? I mean, it feels like every so many years in our country, things are kind of calm, major horrible things don't happen, and then something, and it's like, oh my God, well, why did we not know this? Or like, we did, we just kind of forgot, you know, when it gets some time between.
Yeah, Tony, it better be a wake-up call for New Orleans specifically, because they are hosting one of the biggest events in the world in a matter of weeks. We're talking about the Super Bowl. There are going to be millions of people there. You want to talk about a target for terrorists, for bad actors, for any type of criminal activity, that's it. And so they are going to have to learn these lessons and learn them quickly, implement protective mechanisms to make sure that this biggest event, one of the biggest events on earth, is a safe event for everybody.
And that's a scary thought, because you're literally talking a few weeks away. Security for an event like this starts up pretty much the moment the city's announced that, okay, it's going to be here. Let's start planning. I would think most of the T's have been crossed and the I's have been dotted by now. I mean, how do you adequately prepare then for this event if you were still operating with the same sort of systems in place and thinkings in place that allowed this to happen on New Year's? And this is the construction company, if you will, that is also planning the security then of the Super Bowl. I would think there'd have to be a lot of last minute overhauls that are going to be taking place here.
100%. There are going to have to be some serious pivots that are made. There is going to have to be some diligent and quick investigation that takes place. And I love New Orleans, don't get me wrong. Mm-hmm. But historically, you know, government officials there, there's been a feeling of complacency, a feeling of ineptness at times. And that's just sort of a reputation New Orleans government has had for a long time. And so they are going to have to show, then this is their opportunity to show, no, we can keep people safe. We can host one of the biggest events in the world without some huge event. And to get there, there's a lot of work between now and the brief several weeks we have until the Super Bowl.
New Orleans doesn't necessarily have the greatest track record of providing security for their citizens or things going off without a hitch. The last Super Bowl that took place, I believe it was 2013, at least it was one of the last Super Bowls not that long ago. And I remember watching that one. The power went out and yes. Everybody thought, what is about to happen here? Because it's a shocking idea that the Super Bowl loses power. And at the end of the day, I believe they blamed it on some transformer that wasn't functioning correctly. It was shocking. Delayed the game 34 minutes. It was the Ravens versus the 49ers. So that time they hosted it, you had that massive of an incident. I guess, you know, their track record isn't great, and it continues to not be great. And obviously, we just saw a horrible example of just how great it is not. It's a huge risk going into the Super Bowl. I'm just shocked that the city still operates, I guess, with this level of incompetence.
You know, you look at Hurricane Katrina, and by no means was that only New Orleans officials' fault.
But, no, yeah,
they're certainly, they know they've got a hurricane season every year, and it could be real bad. And by all accounts, there was not enough protective measures in place for those citizens, federally, locally, and municipal on the municipal level. But yeah, they've got a chance to turn that reputation around, and I'm hoping that they can do it because there have been so many fumbles. Excuse the pun, in terms of safety when it comes to these big events.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the podcast. If you'd like to listen to an ad-free version of this episode and all of our episodes, then search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. That's our premium channel where all of our ad-free and advanced episodes live, all in one place. True Crime Today Premium Plus. Search it on Apple Podcasts and press subscribe. Even try it for 3 days free.
All right, true crime addicts, let's cut the crap. You're knee-deep in the gory details of your favorite podcast when suddenly a commercial hits like a bad meal. Seriously? You deserve better. Upgrade to True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts, where you can binge without those annoying ads. Plus, get extended interviews that go deeper into the darkness and early access to episodes so you can be the first to know. It's like trading up from fast food to fine dining, but with more blood. So, go ahead. Search for True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe and feast on the good stuff.